I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and Nancy Pearl has put together a book list just for us. It's got all kinds of recommendations, and they are fascinating. I mean, some of the bios of the authors are as fascinating as the books, I think. She's also giving us a preview of two great titles that will be coming out in November. One is the third in a three-volume series on Eleanor Roosevelt, and so we will talk about all of her recommendations. Nancy Pearl, of course, if you've never heard her before, she's been on our show for many years, many times. She's a librarian's librarian. She's a best-selling author. She's written the whole book list series, many of those with suggestions. For those of you in book clubs, they're all great suggestions of many, many books in all kinds of genres. She formerly held the position of executive director of the Washington Center for the Book at Seattle Public Library. She regularly appears on NPR recommending books, and I love this. She was named Librarian of the Year. In the year 2011, and she's been helping us out for a long time, recommending all kinds of books. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I do hope you have your papers and pencils ready. Scotty will be writing down, or KP, a list of books, and we'll also put the recommendations, so don't keep calling and saying, what did you say? We'll put them on our Facebook page. If you don't have Facebook, we'll get it to you another way. But all of the recommendations will be on our Facebook page. Give us a little bit of time when the show is over, and there it'll be. For your reading enjoyment for months to come. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you need a recommendation in any genre, she's your gal. And does she remember what she's read? I just don't know how she does it, but she does. And Nancy, it's been a while. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. It's so nice to be back with you.
Oh, it's so great to have you here. And I love the recommendations. I want to start, if you don't mind, Nancy, because I read this guy's bio and I thought, maybe he wrote a great novel, but he should write a book about himself. This Michael Gruber?
Oh, Michael Gruber.
Oh, my gosh. What a life. This guy's had a life.
and all of his novels are very different. My favorite, very, very favorite, is The Good Son, which came out actually maybe in 2005. So it's been around. It's still in print. And this is one of the best books to take on a trip, because you'll be so engrossed in the book that you won't notice the airplane ride. It's like tunnel vision reading this book. It is a page turner. It's wonderful. So the main character in it is a young man, Theo. He's an ex-Delta guy who's now working in a kind of shadowy part of the government. His mother is a psychotherapist. She married a man from Afghanistan, and Theo was raised mostly in Afghanistan. But he's back in the United States working, as I said, for the U.S. government. And his mother has planned this kind of get together with psychotherapists from around the world to try to figure out how to bring peace to Afghanistan in a non-political kind of way. And on their way to the meeting place in, you know, the center of Afghanistan, not a safe place to do this, but his mother chose to do it this way, the group of the psychotherapists are kidnapped.
Ooh.
And when Theo hears that, when he learns about that, he decides he is going to go and rescue his mother. Wow, it's
wow,
so good.
It sounds just up my alley. I like books like that. And do you mind if I had to read a little of the writer's bio? He's from the Iowa Writers' Workshop. I went to Iowa. I love that place. But he also has a PhD in marine sciences with a focus on, of all things, the octopus. He was a roadie with rock groups, a chef with the Hog Farm Commune, where he was famous for his roadkill dumplings, and he was an analyst and speechwriter in the Carter administration. Have you ever heard such a bio? I mean, seriously.
And when you meet him, you would which I've had the opportunity.
Oh, you have.
Yes. You would never know any of that. And he tells wonderful, wonderful stories. Just with great, a little bit of humor. He's very funny as well.
Yeah, I'd like to meet him sometime. That's great. So, are these books you put on the list? Are they summertime reading for you? Do you read something different in the fall?
You know, I'm surprised. This only has one work of nonfiction, this list on it. And I think that it's because in the summer, somehow, you know, I want to be outside.
Right.
I want to take advantage of the good weather that we get in Seattle during those few months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't want something to sort of weigh me down in a way. So these are what I would call really good light reading.
Mm-hmm. And the nonfiction is about the space program, right?
It is. Margaret Lazarus Dean, Leaving Orbit, Notes from the Last Days of American Space Flight. This is a combination memoir and a history of the space program, of the U.S. space program. And this is a very I found this book fascinating, and it certainly made me look at the American space program, or its demise at this point, in a very heightened kind of way. So there were three major books by really major writers about the beginnings of the space program. Of course, Tom Wolfe, The Right Stuff, mm-hmm. and Norman Mailer did a book, and also Oriana Fallaci, an Italian journalist, wrote a book about, you know, starting with the Mercury astronauts and moving forward. But Margaret Dean points out in this book that there isn't a book about the end of the space program. And what would that be like? How would it tell the story of why, in those intervening years between the Mercury astronauts, the first flights, and today, what happened? And the author teaches nonfiction creative writing, I believe, in Kentucky, and but made many, many trips in the course of writing this book down to Cape Canaveral. So I think a lot of people would say, well, if you're talking about the end of the space program, it's the Challenger disaster that did it. And you would be right, but I think that what the Challenger disaster did, and it's interesting because just like people remember, this is what I found, just like people remember where they were when Kennedy was killed,
sure.
they remember where they were when they heard about the Challenger disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, and I think what happened, what Margaret Dean talks about in the book, which I think is correct, is that we lost our nerve, that the death of the astronauts was it went beyond what we were comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
That sacrifice was too much, even for the possibility of going to Mars or Saturn.
Interesting.
So, yeah, but it's written. It's lovely writing. I think it's one of those books. If you have even a passing interest in the possibility of continuing space flight or manned space flight, I guess, then this would be a book I think that you would really enjoy.
I think a lot of our listeners love that. And I wonder if it's both of us, both you and I were alive when people walked on the moon, which they actually
right.
did. I remember that day so well.
Yep.
But I love these space stories, and we do as many shows as we can, you know, looking at different galaxies and all the latest technology. It leaves me optimistic, Nancy, that during maybe not my lifetime, so I hope there's something beyond so somebody can tell me, that we're going to discover something that's very real, that's another civilization, that somehow it's going to transform everything.
Right. I was hoping, futilely as it turns out, that with the success of the Mars rover,
yes.
and, you know, and all of the information we've found out about Saturn recently, all of that would re-energize the space program, re-energize NASA into recruiting astronauts again, training them, and really planning to send manned spaceflight.
Mm. Would you have been interested in being an astronaut?
No, I never. No.
No, I couldn't do it either.
Because all I want to do is read.
You would have had a lot of time for it, Nancy.
I don't know, doing those scientific tests. I was never very good at math, so.
Well, you're really good at reading, so that's okay. You're off the charts in that regard.
You mentioned
the Kennedys. My the book that, you know, I read a lot of book about the Kennedys because I read a lot about them. I was alive in that time. And my book that I think he's on next week, the author, is he, Scotty? Biography of Robert Kennedy, which I think is very good. There have been some that haven't been good. Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon, Larry Tye's book, which is very good because it's so darn well researched. And it looks at his involvement with Joe McCarthy and, you know, the dark side of Bobby Kennedy and the wildly optimistic, beautiful side of him that gave so many people inspiration. It's very well done.
I haven't read that yet, but I'll put that, move that to the top of my list after you said that.
Well, thank you.
But you know, I was in I was in bookstores both times. I was in a bookstore. Yes, at my college, at St. John's College in Annapolis, Maryland, when Kennedy was killed. And I was in the bookstore that I worked at in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when the Challenger disaster occurred. Says something. Yeah. I don't know what.
I don't either. But it sounds like the beginning of something, a story or something, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. If the U.S. sends, well, yeah, maybe I should stay out of bookstores and there would be no more tragedies.
Yeah, I haven't. You can't do that. That's your life. You wanted to give us a little preview, which is Fine by Me, Volume 3, The Definitive Biography of Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yes. Blanche Weazin Cook's first book came out more than 25 years ago, her first volume of her biography of Eleanor Roosevelt. And it is, I mean, this is probably, I have great respect and just always read David McCullough's biographies. I mean, there are certain biographers that I always read and really get a lot out of. But I have never read a better biography than Blanche Weazin Cook's biography of Eleanor Roosevelt. So she wrote the first one. It was very, very well reviewed. It's a feminist biography. She's a feminist, you know, one of the strong feminists of the late 20th century. And I mean, Kathleen, this book just blew me away.
Really?
It is a stunning biography. And I know you like biographies.
I do.
So you need to get this, you need to start this series. And then many years later, maybe a decade later, came the second volume, and then the third volume didn't appear. And you know, Blanche Weazin Cook was not young when the first volume came out, and the big fear was that she would never finish it. Kind of what happened with William Manchester's biography, multi-volume biography of Churchill,
right,
which he never finished, but. Lo and behold, the third volume is coming out in November 1st of 2016, and I'm hoping that the publisher will reissue all three of these books. Will make a box set of all these books, because it would be a wonderful, wonderful gift
for anyone
interested in history, and a fascinating woman.
Yes.
Just a fascinating woman.
Yes. And this one takes us through, to me, one of the more interesting parts of her life, very visible, World War II, the death of her husband,
yes,
the founding of the UN, and her death.
And her death in 1962.
Hmm. Yeah, she was something. There are people who will be remembered forever, and she will certainly be one of them. Nancy, let's pause for a moment and invite the audience to join us. Nancy Pearl is with us this hour. Hooray! And she has a whole list of books she's recommending. We'll put them on our Facebook page. She can also guide you to the perfect book for the rest of the summer or beyond the summer. She has lots and lots of recommendations, and here's how you reach our show. The number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we'll have all of these books listed in just a little while. But we certainly would love to have you have a chance to speak with Nancy and get a recommendation. We'll move on to a novel, which is about football, actually, and Nancy's going to talk me into reading this one. It's the Throwback Special, so that'll be the next one we'll discuss. There are many more on the list. Stay with us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nancy Pearl, librarian, best-selling author, literary critic, is with us this hour to give book recommendations, and feel free to join our conversation. She'd be happy to give you a recommendation, and she's the best around, so take advantage of the opportunity. 800-486-8655 is the number. All right, talk me into reading a novel about football.
Well, I think you need to get this for your house, because I know you have football fans,
okay,
right? Sports
okay.
fans in your house. So Chris Batchelder's The Throwback Special. I just actually reread this book because I knew you and I were going to talk about it. And I have to say, this is a book that, although the plot has to do with football, this is for anyone who loves good writing and a terrific character-driven novel. So this is about a group of men, middle-aged men in their 40s, who get together once a year to reenact one particular play in a football game that was played in 1985. It was shown on Monday Night Football. It was one of the Monday Night Football games. So, you know, millions of people saw this, and these men come together to reenact it. And the play was, I think if there are football fans out there, we'll know what play it was, because it's sort of gone down in infamy. But it's when it was between the New York Giants and the Washington football team. And Lawrence Taylor of the New York Giants, defensive tackle, I believe, tackled Joe Theismann, the quarterback for Washington. And the tackle, which was legal, was so violent and so powerful that it broke his leg in several places, and he never played again. Mm. It ended Joe Theismann's career. So these men, who are all, you know, who are all coming together to reenact this, it's a book about middle-aged men coming to try to accept that they're no longer young. So it's kind of the malaise of middle-aged men, and you get to know there are 21 men who come together, and they've done this for years and years and years and years, and you get to know all of them through little vignettes about them. Oh. And the writing is, I mean, you know, I still reread a lot, but there are often books that I reread that don't thrill me as much as they did originally. But this one, as I reread it, The Throwback Special, just amazing. Mm. Just amazing.
Oh, Nancy, that's quite a recommendation.
I know. You have to read it. It's so wonderful.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll stretch what I will read. All right. Thank you. Well, and I respect you enormously. So the fact that you've reread it and still say that it's extraordinary, then I believe you.
And you can watch. You can actually watch the play on YouTube. It's hard.
It's hard to watch it.
And once you watch it, you can't get it out of your mind. So be aware of that.
Okay. Now, this one sounds interesting. I don't know anything about it, but the characters sound fascinating. The Last Samurai.
Oh, my gosh. Helen DeWitt's Last Samurai. It was her first novel. It came out in about 2000. It sold, I believe, over 100,000 copies and then disappeared.
Hmm.
This was like one of those lost it's one of the books that's just up my alley because it's a lost classic. But if you talk to people who read the book when it first came out, as I did, and then they would recommend it to people, and then we would discover, oh, no, it's no longer in print. It's not available. Well, it's just been brought back into print. And in a lovely edition, it's now available. I still have my hardback copy on my shelf, one of my treasured books. It's an odd, wonderful, immersive novel. And by that I mean that you just get into these people's lives. And the people whose lives you get into are a mother and son. A mother, Sybilla, a very bright, single mom, trying to raise her prodigy of a son, Ludo. You know, Ludo's the kind of kid who read it too, learned Greek, learned Arabic, all of those things. He, in this book, he's still a very little boy. And Sybilla will never tell Ludo who his father is. Now, Sybilla and Ludo spend many of their days riding on the Circle Line in London, just going round and round and round, reading and talking. But many of their evenings are spent watching and re-watching Kurosawa's movie, The Last Samurai, and which they both adore. So Ludo, from clues his mother has given and, you know, things that she said, things that he's maybe overheard, he identifies seven men, one of whom he believes is his father, but which one? And so he embarks on a series of tests for these men.
This is great.
Now, you know, it's one of those books. The books that I would compare it to, although the plots are not at all similar, but the sense of the book, the feeling you get when you read the book, I think, is the same feeling that you get when you read David James Duncan's wonderful novel, The Brothers Kay, or Pat Conroy's The Prince of Tides. Oh. That kind of, you're in a different world, mm-hmm. and you're just really happy to be there, and it's a nice, thick book, and it's certainly always been, for many, many, many years, one of my favorite books.
All right, I'm on that one, too. Let's go to some phone calls for you. Kelly in Lake Mills. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How are you, Kelly?
Good. I was just calling because I happen to just love British television or anything that kind of takes place in England or Ireland or Scotland, and I tend to like more of the lighthearted, quirky village settings, and I was wondering if you knew of a book or a book series that would kind of fit that mold.
Now, Kelly, do you like mysteries?
If they're lighthearted enough.
Yeah, okay. So a really good series that you might quite enjoy is the Agatha Raisin books. Have you read those?
No, I haven't.
Okay, great. So Agatha Raisin, it's a long series. It's by M.C. Beaton. And they're now on television. If on Acorn streaming video is, they've done a series of those. So the Agatha Raisin, you'll laugh. I mean, they're just great, great fun. And you know what we would call cozy mysteries, where the mysteries, Raymond Chandler once described cozy mysteries as the mysteries that occur in a teacup. But I would say these are mysteries that are off the page. So you're not reading, you know, grim and gore and anything like that. So the M.C. Beaton books would just be, I think, terrific for you. There's an older writer. The books are now being reissued. A woman named D.E. Stevenson. And they're being reissued by a company called Source Books. And all of those books that they've reissued so far, I can't wait for all of them to come out because I'm gonna replace my old crummy copies with them. But those are light and just great reads. I sort of comforting reads. That's how I read them. Anna and her daughters is one that I would really recommend to start with. And then Listening Valley. Oh, those two. You'll love them. Read those two.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. I think you have, I don't know how many mysteries you have, but you do have a mystery which sounds intriguing on the list. Stan Jones, his first novel. Is that a mystery?
It is a mystery.
Okay.
Yes. White Sky, Black Ice. So Soho Press had a great idea for summer reading, and what they did was reissue the first novels in all of the many mystery series that they publish. So, I mean, this is wonderful because a lot of times what happens is that people pick up a later mystery and then, you know, are looking for the first one, and oftentimes it's not in print. So Soho Press brought these all out at a very good paperback price, $9.99, I think. I'm not being paid by Soho Press to say any of this. I just really loved the idea of this. Mm-hmm. So they have mystery writers. So in these books that they brought out, there are mystery writers that I was familiar with. with Peter Temple, for one, whom I just adore, Australian. But I was not at all familiar with Stan Jones. And so I picked up White Sky, Black Ice, partly because I liked the name, the title of the book. But I found it just a very good mystery that would lead me to read all the other ones in this series. Now, the main character in this is an Inupiat Eskimo living in Alaska, who is named Nathan Active, who was, his mother was 15 when he was born and really couldn't raise him. So he was adopted by two white teachers, a married couple, in this small Alaskan village that they lived in, and taken to Anchorage, where he grew up. So there's some of that, you know, fish out of water stuff, because Nathan Active, who is one, is an Alaska state trooper, is now stationed in the small town where he was born and where his mother still lives. So in this book is about two deaths that occur in very close proximity, two suicides, and among Inupiats. And Nathan believes, or has the feeling, that these were not suicides, that it didn't make sense for these two very different men who had only one thing in common. They both worked for a mining agency, a mining company, that was a partnership between the Inupiats and a Norwegian mining company. So the only thing these guys had in common was that they both worked there, but they didn't work together. They were very different ages. They were both from this village where Nathan is stationed. And so he starts investigating that, and various things happen. This whole series, all of the series that Soho does, what Soho is known for in many ways is publishing mysteries set in different countries or different areas of the country. So there's, you know, Australian mysteries, there's this Alaska one, there's some Cara Black's mysteries are set in France. And if you're a mystery fan and you're looking for something new, I would check out Stan Jones for sure. But almost any of that, of those books that are just have just been reissued, I would definitely take a look at.
You know, I've shied away from mysteries almost all of my life, and I think it's because I don't like to be scared. I really don't. And I'm wondering if you're recommending mysteries that will scare people, or are they just so involved that it's a thing that's going on with your mind as you're reading it?
I don't think those aren't the kind of mysteries I like either. I don't like I won't read a mystery where you're in, where the first chapter or the preface is, the introduction is when you're in the head of the killer or the person who's going to be killed. Right. I don't want that. So I don't read mysteries that are too scary for me. Although I can deal with some of that tension in a thriller, but not.
I'm with you. I agree.
You know, but these mysteries, so these mysteries are not scary mysteries. I mean, what I think what all the mysteries that I enjoy have in common is interesting characters and good writing.
Let's go to Bridget next in Platteville. Hi, Bridget.
Hi.
Hi.
If my call gets dropped, my apologies, but I'm driving in the middle of nowhere, so.
Okay, be careful.
Yeah. No, I'm hands-free.
Okay.
So thank you very much. I've enjoyed this as I drive. My question was, one of my favorite books is The History of Love by Nicole Krauss.
Uh-huh.
And I love her style. I love the story itself, and I was wondering if Nancy could recommend books in that same...
I'm sorry, I missed the title. The History of what?
Love.
Oh, of love. Oh,
the History of Love by Nicole Krauss.
Okay, Nancy?
Yes. So so there's a couple of books that I would suggest. Again, the plots are not going to be the same. You know, they're not going to be similar, but I think that you would get the same feeling from them. And now the name of this one just went out of my head.
No, it'll come back.
Yeah, Rebecca... Oh my gosh!
Don't worry about it.
I think we talked about it on an earlier show, Kathleen.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Let me think. Can I think about that?
Because yes.
Now, okay.
Of course,
right.
You can think about it. Yeah.
All right. Let me think.
Thanks, Bridget, very much for your call. We'll just move on.
Okay.
Crooked Heart. This one sounds very interesting to me. Very interesting.
Oh, this is great fun. And actually, for Kelly, who want a kind of lighthearted British stuff, this can be easily classified as a comic novel. So Crooked Heart by Lissa Evans is set during World War II. It's set during the Blitz. Mm-hmm. And at that was the time when the British government encouraged all the parents in London to let their children be evacuated to the countryside because they were expecting London to be so heavily bombed as it was. And we're introduced first to a boy, 10-year-old boy named Noel, who's very smart and one of those kids who thinks ahead. I mean, he's a planner. And he is living with his grandmother. I'm not giving anything away. This is not a spoiler. But his grandmother dies early in the book, and Noel is evacuated to the countryside. And he's assigned to live with a woman named Vera, who lives with her adult son in one of these small villages. Now, Vera is somebody who is very fond of scams. Vera is, you know, the kind of person who, if the opportunity arises, she will take that opportunity to winkle some money out of whoever she's with. Mm-hmm. The thing about Vera, though, is she is not a planner. She is an opportunistic scammer. But you throw Noel into the mix, who is a planner, and great things can happen in the world of scams. What's wonderful about this book is the relationship between Noel and Vera. You know, the humor comes from the kinds of scams that they do and how, you know, and what happens as a result of that. It's just a nice, funny in places novel about these two lonely people, a woman and a young boy, who develop into a family.
Yeah. There seems to be a theme in a lot, and I know you like these kinds of books too, and I love this about your recommendations. All of the characters, you tell these stories about these characters, and they all sound like they're extremely interesting people, and you just can't wait to read them because you feel like you're going to really know them.
Right. And those are exactly the kinds of books that I like. And I thought of the book that I was trying to think of.
Okay.
So the book is called Unbecoming. And it is it's Nicole Krausian, I think, in its attention to detail and to the kind of in-between moments in relationships. It doesn't have that kind of historical aspect that Nicole Krauss or her then husband Jonathan Safran Foer employed in some of their books, but I think that Unbecoming would be a good choice for Nicole Krauss fans.
Great, Bridget. Thanks so much for your call. Mary is next in Milwaukee. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
Hi.
See, if you read the book, and I don't remember the author's name, but it's called The 100-Year-Old Man Who Climbed Out the Window and Ran Away.
Yes, I have.
Isn't that a hoot?
It is. You want another one just like it?
Sure.
As a librarian, that's our favorite question and the one that just, you know, terror pours into our hearts when that question is asked. Because humor is so hard, because what some people think is funny, other people...
How true.
Do not. And some jokes go over better than others or whatever. So the person who wrote that book has other books. And I would certainly... That would be a place where I would start. I think it's Johansson or something.
Do you recall who it is, Mary?
Yeah, that sounds right. Johannes something or other.
Right.
Oh, of course,
right.
Johannes something or other. Okay.
Right. So I would look for that. If you want another, I mean, I can recommend some humorous books that I think will, you know, make you chuckle as you're reading them. They're not going to be Swedish or you know, they're not going to be Scandinavian. There's a wonderfully, because most of the books that we're getting from Scandinavia these days are mysteries, are pretty, in my mind, gruesome mysteries. Yeah. So, you know, that's why this book was so different. Yeah, so I would try. I would try his other books. I believe that's not his first novel.
Okay, Mary.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the caller. Number 800-486-8655. Nancy Pearl is our guest. Eugene and Viola. Hi.
Hi. Hello, Kathleen. I'm reading the book of the author that you had on about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Evicted. Mm-hmm. Poverty and Profit in American City. I'm about two-thirds of the way through it. It's by Matthew Desmond.
Yes.
And it's a tough read, but it's well worth it.
Yeah. Do you know it, Nancy? It really is.
I do. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think it's a really important book. And it's just the kind of book that I really enjoy. I would, for people who liked that book, there's a book called Ghetto Land by Jill Leovi, which is about the Los Angeles, about policemen in Los Angeles, nonfiction again. She's a newspaper reporter. Hmm. Another book that I think is really important to read is called The Prize, Who's in Charge of America's Schools, mm-hmm. Which focuses on the $100 million that Mark Zuckerberg and his foundation gave to transform the Newark public schools, mm-hmm. and what happened as a result, mm-hmm. of that. So both of those books, I think, along with Evicted, they're tough, but they're very—they're tough because they're talking about really important issues.
Right.
And I have to say that Ghetto Land is sympathetic to everyone. Again, nonfiction is sympathetic to everyone concerned. It's not a bashing victims. It's not bashing police. It's an amazingly well done look at real life on a police force.
Mm, that sounds good. And somehow we missed the prize. I know we were going to do a show on that, but we can't do everything, right? But maybe we should revisit that. I meant to read that book, too. So that's why we have Nancy on. Nancy Pearl is our guest this hour. We're getting recommendations. We've been through many, but not all of the book recommendations she has put together just for us. Just for us. The list will be on our Facebook page in just a little while. Give us some time after the show to do just that. And if you would like to speak with Nancy, Nancy, of course, is probably the best-known librarian in the whole country. She is a best-selling author. She's done a whole series of book lists. She's on National Public Radio and radio stations all over the country. She's based in Seattle, Washington, where she regularly appears on public radio there. And she was named Librarian of the Year in 2011. She's won many awards for her love of examination of and sharing books in this country and beyond. Our number is 800-486-8655. And we'll take more calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to the list, Nancy. This one sounded really interesting to me as well. It almost sounds like it's a mystery, too. Dominic Smith's The Last Painting of Sarah DeVos?
Yeah, or DeVoe. I'm not sure how it's
DeVoe.
Pronounced. But it's kind of a mystery, but you're not going to find it in the mystery section of the library or the bookstore. This is a novel that goes between 17th century Holland and the present. And the main character in the present is an artist who works as a curator. She agrees, really one of those foolish things you agree to for some reason and then you regret for the rest of your life. She agrees to copy a 17th century painting, to make a copy of this painting. She's not sure why the person wants the copy, but she makes a copy of it. So we are reading that story, and then in alternating chapters, we're reading the story of the woman artist in 17th century Holland who painted that painting, and that's Sarah DeVoe.
Uh-huh.
So you're going back and forth, and really into both of their lives. Every time it switched chapters, I was a little sad to leave the one behind. But in the present, Ellie's issues that come up as a result of her agreeing to paint the picture give some suspense to the novel. But really, it's an examination of these two women and their lives and the decisions that they make and what life was like for a female painter in a very male-dominated world of 17th century Dutch art.
Mm. So Sarah DeVoe, I just don't know anything about her. Was she real?
No, she's based on real artists, real women artists, but she herself is not real.
Okay.
I'm saying that and I'm believing that, but I could be wrong. I think I checked at one time.
Yeah, I think you probably did. So you liked it?
I loved it. It's just wonderful historical fiction as well as being this contemporary story.
That sounds good. Cameron is next in Black River Falls. Hi, Cameron.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, I was going to ask, well, I'm female-to-male transgender, so I was going to ask about LGBTQ-related books.
Okay, so the one that you might have already read this, and I was just reminded of it recently, but there's a book called Conundrum. Have you read that, Cameron?
I haven't.
Okay, so this is a book by a woman named Jan Morris, and it's about her transition from James Morris to Jan Morris. And this occurred in the 1980s, well before it was as accepted as it is now. And she was, as James Morris, she was an adventurer, a writer. She climbed Everest. She did all of these, what we might think of as kind of macho male things, but all the time believing that she was female, and then made the transition. And it's one of those books that, you just can't forget it once you read it. And I would highly, highly recommend Conundrum. Another book that, and I'm going to try to get the title right. I want to say it's called Christa Dora, which is about the AIDS epidemic, but a novel about that, which I think is always interesting to read, books about, reading fiction about a major events, I think sometimes helps you understand what happened in a different way. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend those two books.
All right, Cameron.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for your call. Judy in Waterford, hi.
Hi, love your show today. I was just wondering, I love the Rosamund Pilcher books, and wondering if you had anything along those lines that you could recommend.
Well, I suspect, I too love the Rosamund Pilcher books, and I suspect you've already read Maeve Binchy?
Yes, I've
read some of hers, right?
Yes, okay. So what I would do if I were you is I would go back to D.E. Stevenson that I mentioned earlier, British writer who wrote about the same time that Rosamund Pilcher, maybe a little earlier than Rosamund Pilcher, was writing. But it has a lot of those same themes that Rosamund Pilcher did so well. But, you know, nothing is going to be like Rosamund Pilcher, I have to say.
Yeah, even her son doesn't write as well.
Yeah, no, totally not. And, I just think you and I and those of us who loved Rosamund Pilcher are just going to have to go back and keep rereading them.
Okay. I had one suggestion for the woman who wanted the light English.
Good.
Also, the Beatrix Potter Cottage Tales by Susan Albert Wittig, or Wittig Albert.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, right.
Yeah, I just finished reading those, and those were just delightful.
Uh-huh. Oh, good suggestion.
Thanks, Judy. Thanks so much for the call. We have a couple more books to get to on your list, Nancy. The Ruth Galloway is an overweight 40-ish forensic archaeologist. What is the name of this one?
Oh, The Crossing Place.
That's it, Crossing Place.
So this is another British mystery. It is set in Norfolk, way up north in England. The main character, Ruth Galloway, is a professor of archaeology. She's an archaeologist as well as a professor of archaeology at a university in Norfolk, and gets involved with she's called in by the local police when a body is found, and they're, you know, not sure how old the body is, and various things happen. Now, I don't say this about a lot of mystery series, but this is this particular series, the Ruth Galloway mystery series by Ellie Griffiths, you have to read in order. Or it would be much better to read in order. So you want to start with the first one, The Crossing Place. And I read Ruth Galloway both for the plot and for the mystery, I guess, a little bit. But mostly because you run across just wonderful lines in these books. So one of the characters has a child, and says, after the baby was born, she got her old figure back, which was quite a disappointment because she was looking forward to having a new one. So it's you know, it's sentences like that that just make me love a book.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the call. Sandy sends a message on Facebook. Michael Gruber's Tropic of Night is one of my all-time favorites. And the Max Tudor Mysteries by G.M., I don't know how to pronounce it, M-A-L-L-I-E-T, are oddly engrossing, very British, and very cozy.
Cool. Great. Yes, Malliot, I think, is how you pronounce it, but I could be wrong. Oh, good. Good suggestions.
Yeah.
Kathleen, can I just share something, some exciting news with you?
Oh, yeah, I love to hear that. Yeah.
So I'm having a novel coming out Touchstone.
Yay, I was going to ask about it, and then I thought, don't do that, Kathleen, but now you brought
it
up. Good,
yeah,
Nancy.
It's coming out from Touchstone, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster, next August, a year.
Ooh.
Isn't that exciting?
It's incredibly exciting. Are you finished with it?
Well, now I'm doing the revisions. Now I'm in the revision process.
Nancy,
which
isn't that great?
Isn't that exciting?
Yes, it is. Do you like it? I know you've been working on it for a while.
I've just been extraordinarily fortunate. The editor at Touchstone, she's the editor-in-chief, Tara Parsons, she is just, you know, she gets the book. She loves it as much as I do. And the suggestions, you know, the discussions that we've had have just been wonderful. And I think in the best of editorial hands. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Can you give an inkling of what it's about or not?
Yes, it's about a marriage between two unlikely people who maybe perhaps shouldn't have gotten married in the first place. And it's seen at the defining moments in their lives.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Oh, Nancy, congrats. I'm so proud of you.
Oh, thank you.
That's great. You. All right. Well, we don't normally do novels, but we'll do yours.
Well.
So you just let us know and put us right on
God
your list.
God willing.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful news. Chris in Madison, probably our last caller. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Love your show. Just wanted to recommend a book that I love that's fiction, and I'm typically a nonfiction reader, is called The Persian Pickle Club by Sandra Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I loved it because there was a mystery and it's about quilting.
Oh.
Yes. You know, there are a couple of mystery series that are about quilting as well that you might want to take a look at. And your librarian at your local library can help you find those. There's also an older title called How to Make an American Quilt by Whitney Otto, O-T-T-O, which would be fun, I think, for you to look at. A writer who I think is close to, writes a lot like Sandra Dallas, is a woman named Lorna Landvik. And my memory is that she's from Wisconsin.
Hmm.
So anyway, so you might want to take a look at those books, too.
Okay, and thank you so much for the call, for all of your calls. Nancy, thank you for compiling the list and for being with us for another wonderful hour. I just feel like you've taken us to so many places, and I haven't even read the books yet. So I'll have to read them. Thank
you. Well, it's always such a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Nancy. Nancy Pearl, our guest librarian extraordinary librarian. She has a list that she compiled just for us, and it will be on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. So before you call and say, what was the name of that book? It's going to be there. Just give us a little while. And she's given us some wonderful recommendations, and you've done the same. So thanks for all of your recommendations this hour. I love these shows. They're fun. They are fun. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing the hour. Thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We'll be with you again tomorrow. We'll talk about voting, the first hour of the program, and how Donald Trump should be covered by the press, hour two.